The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
When Jesus heard that John had been arrested, he withdrew to Galilee. He left Nazareth and went to live in Capernaum by the sea, in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, that what had been said through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled. Land of Zebulun and land of Naphtali, the way to the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who sit in darkness have seen a great light. On those dwelling in a land overshadowed by death, light has arisen. From that time on, Jesus began to preach and say, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." As he was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and his brother Andrew, casting a net into the sea. They were fishermen. He said to them, "Come after me, and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. He walked along from there and saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, mending their nets. He called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. He went around all of Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and curing every disease and illness among the people. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
So it was last week that we settled back into ordinary time. But there was one slight exception. Last week we heard from the Gospel of John. It's today, the third Sunday in ordinary time, which begins our actual journey through the Gospel of Matthew, which will continue for many, many weeks, continuing even into the first 2 weeks of Lent. And this journey through Matthew begins with the beginning of Jesus' public ministry and the choosing of 12 apostles, all of which happens after his temptation in the desert. Now, if you have read these readings ahead of time, and by the way, I always make that suggestion, certainly to those in RCIA. If you would like to have these readings pop for you when you hear them proclaimed in church, just take a few minutes and read them ahead of time and see what difference it's going to make when you hear them. Just trust me and give it a try. By reading them ahead of time, you're going to get a whole lot more out of them when you hear them proclaimed during Mass. Now, for this one, particularly, I guess, the Gospel, one thing it would do when you read it through, and even after hearing it, you have probably a lot of questions in your mind. For example, why? What is this about Jesus withdrawing into Galilee, the land of the Gentiles, after John the Baptist is arrested? A Gentile, by the way, you know what a Gentile is. Very simply means you're not a Jew. You're either a Jew or you're a Gentile. So the land of the non-Jews, the land of the Gentiles. And then even more perhaps, what does it mean that Jesus goes to dwell in the land of Zebulun and Naphtali? What's that all about? What or where or who are Zebulun and Naphtali? They must be important. I mean, Matthew emphasizes it twice. He not only tells us that Jesus goes to dwell in these places, But then he quotes a prophecy from Isaiah that speaks about these territories. What are they? What are these places? Probably most of us, when we hear Zebulun and Naphtali, don't know what it means, and we just ignore it. So we'll take a look at that. But of course, the central question that underlies all of this is that what does any of this have to do with us in the here and now, here and today? Okay, first then, to kind of set things up a little bit, imagine in your mind a map of the Holy Land. It's really simple. The Holy Land is kind of long and skinny, and it's broken up into two regions, the north and the south. The southern territory is known either as Judah or Judea, both the same thing, and Jerusalem is its capital. So that's down in the south. Galilee, where Jesus went to today, is up in the northern part of the Holy Land. That's where Nazareth is. That's where Jesus grew up. So now John the Baptist was doing then his ministry in the south, in Judea. And that's where he was arrested, as Jesus heard about, and eventually executed, beheaded by King Herod. So the first question is, why does Jesus leave the land of Judea in the south and head north to Galilee? Well, you might say on a very practical level, Judea is a dangerous place now. John the Baptist, who was immensely popular, was just arrested and ultimately beheaded as a prophet. And if Jesus were to begin his public ministry here in this southern region of Judea, he might face the similar consequences. So maybe in a sense it's a wise decision to get out of the southern region of Judea and head up north to Galilee. But that's not why Matthew says that Jesus heads into the land of Galilee. Matthew says that Jesus does this to fulfill a prophecy, that he goes to the northern territory of Zebulun and Naphtali so that the words of the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. And then Matthew goes so far as to give this passage from Isaiah, the very passage that we heard in our first reading today. Now again, for most of us, probably that prophecy doesn't really mean a whole lot, but Matthew was writing to a Jewish audience. And for a Jewish audience, these two places, Zebulun and Naphtali, are critical. And to understand why they're so critical, let me remind you just a little bit of history very quickly. We actually talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the Solemnity of Christ the King, when we talked about the Kingdom of David. Maybe you recall if you were here, maybe you forgot, let me remind you. It was about 1,000 years before Jesus comes on the scene that God promises King David, the greatest king of Israel, that the kingdom of David, which consists of the 12 tribes of Israel, would last forever. Forever. Forever is a long time. But it doesn't take very long. By like 922 BC, these 12 tribes are split into two different kingdoms. The 10 tribes of the kingdom of up north, which is called the kingdom of Israel, and the 2 tribes down south, which is called the kingdom of Judah. A civil war happens. Not only are these two kingdoms divided, they are at war with each other. And that war continues for several hundred years until something absolutely disastrous, something absolutely devastating happens. something that no Jew would ever, ever forget. In the year 722 BC, the Assyrians invade that northern territory and conquer it. Now, when I say conquer, I don't even mean conquer. I mean they decimated that territory. They thoroughly destroyed those 10 northern tribes. Most of the people were killed. And those few who survived were sent into exile. If you want an analogy of how bad this is, imagine if in the early years of the United States, back when we were 13 colonies, imagine if those 10 of those 13 colonies were invaded and conquered by some foreign power, I don't know, France or England or something. What would that have done to the United States? It would have decimated the Union. It would have totally destroyed. That defeat would have totally destroyed what became the United States. Half of the colonies were destroyed. Most of the people killed. And whoever wasn't killed was sent into slavery. And this is exactly what happens to Israel. The majority of God's people were wiped off the face of the earth. Now, there were a few remnants here and there, but even so, those remnants were overrun by pagans. And if things couldn't get worse, well, they did. To make matters worse, in about 587 BC, the two remaining tribes in the south were invaded by the Babylonians. And the Babylonians destroyed the most sacred thing in the whole Jewish faith. They destroyed Solomon's temple. They tore it to the ground. They burned the city of Jerusalem to the ground. All nothing was left. And the few who survived again were sent into exile. So now, about 500 years before Jesus comes on the scene, things look rather bleak. For one thing, it looks like all of God's promises to King David have come to nothing, that they've all been broken. The kingdom that God said would last forever didn't even last 500 or 600 years. But then, there was a bit of a ray of hope. About 40 or 50 years after the southern territory was conquered by the Babylonians, the Persians defeated the Babylonians. And the king of Persia was actually a nice guy. He permitted those two southern tribes to return home to the southern kingdom. He actually gave them money to rebuild Solomon's temple and to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. So finally, the Babylonian exile came to an end. But the Assyrian exile, the big one, that never ended. The ten tribes of the northern kingdom, along with their Jewish identity, were scattered among the Gentiles. So when we get to the time of Jesus, the time now that we heard in the gospel, the northern kingdom seems lost, decimated, scattered forever. Now why am I reminding you, why am I telling you all this? Well, in that horrible, horrible Assyrian invasion that decimated the northern tribes, guess which were the first two regions to fall and be conquered and sent into exile. Any thoughts who the first two were? You heard the names a few times today. Zebulun and Naphtali. Zebulun and Naphtali were the first to fall. In other words, in that northern territory of Galilee, that's the very place where the exile began, where the overthrow of the 12 tribes started, and so this is precisely where Jesus goes to begin his public ministry. In fact, Jesus beelines to that territory of Galilee because he is going to begin undoing the exile by beginning his ministry in precisely the same place where the exile began. And how does he start? He is going to begin by gathering around himself 12 disciples in order to build a new Israel and establish a new kingdom precisely where the old Israel was devastated and scattered to the four winds. So this is what is so powerful to a first century Jew about those two names, Zebulun and Naphtali. It's as though, as Americans, if I were to describe something to you and began with two numbers, 9-11, what sort of thoughts would be immediately rushing into your mind? It's the same sort of thing. Imagine now, as this is happening, as those people hear the prophecy of Isaiah, listen again to what we heard in the gospel. The people who sit in darkness have seen a great light. On those dwelling in a land overshadowed by death, light has arisen. And then on top of it all, what does Jesus preach when he gets there? He preaches the coming of the kingdom. The kingdom. Any first century Jew, the moment he hears that word kingdom, would immediately have known that kingdom means the kingdom of David, which consists of 12 tribes. So he begins the calling of the 12 disciples again. For any first century Jew, when he hears Jesus, he would hear Jesus talk about the 12, and that's exactly what the apostles were called, the 12, would have immediately recognized that he was talking about gathering the 12 tribes of Israel. But now maybe if you think about it, you might say that maybe we've got a little bit of a problem here. I just said that the 10 northern tribes were totally decimated, destroyed, scattered to the four winds. They were gone. So how is Jesus going to get them back? The answer is so simple. If you want to go and get the 10 lost tribes, you have to go and get the Gentiles. Because that's where they are now. They're scattered among the Gentiles. So that's what Jesus does. Did you hear, the penitential rite that we began at the beginning of Mass? Lord Jesus, you came to gather the nations into the peace of God's kingdom. The nations. Nations in Hebrew, goyim. In Greek, ethne. In Latin, gentium, from which we derive the word Gentiles. So you see, Jesus begins with the Jews, but he moves out to the Gentiles and gathers around himself a new Israel to fulfill the prophecies of the Old Testament. Later on in Matthew's gospel, we're going to hear Jesus say to the apostles, he is going to say to them, "Truly I say to you, in the world to come, when the Son of Man shall sit on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will sit on 12 thrones judging the tribes of Israel." And note again that Jesus said, "In the world to come." He's not talking about going out and finding the lost descendants of the 10 tribes among the Gentiles and then, I don't know, putting them on buses or something and bringing them to an earthly promised land. He's talking about bringing them to a new promised land, a new creation, a new kingdom, not one of this world, a kingdom of heaven. And when does all this finally happen? When does all this come to fulfillment? We don't have time to talk about it today. But I'll give you a hint. It has to do with the Last Supper and the Eucharist. Have any of you here attended our parish Seder Supper during Holy Week? Anybody? Some have? Yes? If you have, and you've heard the answer, if not, come to the parish Seder Meal during Holy Week and hear finally how Jesus restores the kingdom. The kingdom is finally restored. Enough. Enough. The bigger question maybe for us here today, what has this got to do with us, for our lives today? Well, the sense is simple. We count ourselves as disciples of Jesus. Yes, I hope so. That's why we're here. And how do we be disciples? We follow the example set by Jesus to go and bring we as Christians receive we become heralds of the gospel. We receive that great commission to go and make disciples. How do we do that? How do we follow the example by Jesus to follow that God-given mandate? So how do we go about bringing the good news to people? Do we maybe go to Scott's choir practice on Thursday night and say, guess what? I have good news. Can you hear? Not. He comes nuts. Do you go to the women's Bible study and say, I got something to tell you? That's not how we do it. We follow the example of Jesus. We leave this place. We go out those doors and we go to those who are lost to seek that which is lost. There are so many out there who are lost and don't even know they're lost. You know, it's one thing to be lost, it's quite another to be lost and not even know you're lost. There's a hunger out there, a spiritual hunger. I very recently interacted with a young woman, very recently married. She watched some sort of TV show or something by Oprah Winfrey on spirituality. And she was so taken in that she said at the end of the show, oh, how I wish I had a spiritual life. There are people out there searching, hungry, who don't know. They are lost. There are people out there who are sick, a spiritual sickness, and don't know that there is a cure available to them. I think this is the central message of Pope Francis. He often reminds us that the church is not a country club for saints. It's a hospital for sinners. And I love, it uses the image of a field hospital. A field hospital is something you find in a battlefield. Early on in his pontificate, Pope Francis said, let me quote him, I see the church as a field hospital after a battle. It is useless to ask a seriously injured person if he has high cholesterol and about the level of his blood sugars. You have to heal his wounds. Then you can talk about everything else. Heal the wounds. Heal the wounds. Unquote. Pope Francis. When Jesus called those first disciples, they immediately left everything and followed him on his journey in search of the lost. Like Jesus, we too go in search of the lost, regardless of where it takes us, regardless of the standard condition of the people we meet. St. Pope Francis also said something that if you want to be a shepherd, you better be prepared to smell like sheep. And in today's gospel, if you want to be a fisherman, you better smell like fish. We go and meet the wounded, the lost, where they live, regardless of how bad the smell might be, because we have good news. We lift them out of their lost state and bring them to a whole new life. This is the message of today's gospel. Follow the example of Jesus, that we go out and seek and save that which is lost.